Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 177, being recorded on the 3rd of May, 2017, with special guest Megan Lees of HashiCorp. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Kale, Evan, and our special guest Megan. And of course, before we get started with her, and let's just do a quick wrap-up of the news in the Azure space. Kind of a light week, guys.
Yeah.
I think everybody's prepping up for a build at this point, right? Saving all their really cool stuff.
Oh, yeah. When is that? Is that at the end of May?
Or 10th, 11th, and 12th, I think.
Oh, so it's like next week then.
Jeez. Yeah. Yep.
Lost track of that. Okay. you're right. So they are saving up for build.
Yeah.
So I was looking. Go ahead. Which one do you want to pick up?
I always have to go for Azure SQL DB stuff. But we just had the guys from Key Vault and the security team on 2 weeks ago, talking about different places to do encryption and the difference between encryption at rest and encryption real time. And effective earlier this week, all new Azure SQL DBs are encrypted at rest by default using the traditional transparent data encryption or TDE that is kind of people from the on-premises SQL Server world are used to. So, kind of timely given the topic a couple weeks ago, but yeah, just layering in more and more security by default as we go along.
Nice. And I noticed we put in this one for the IoT Gateway SDK. I think we covered this last week, Kale.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't on last week, so I wasn't sure. Yeah. I did have another one in there that's kind of like related from an IoT sense is the Azure Time Series Insights. I don't know if we had talked about that one before. But
No. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've recently been doing some work with this in relation to blockchain. But the Time Series Insights is a new kind of product that's out there in preview now, which is kind of cool. It's a fully managed analytic storage, the whole kind of shoot and match from an analytics standpoint on these high scale inputs of telemetry and data coming off of these IoT devices through our IoT hub, event hubs, these massive kind of event brokers that are piping data into there. Interesting, cool little product that has a nice dashboard, allows you to kind of drill through. Almost feels a little Power BI-ish, but it's really nice, kind of suite of tools. I found myself like trying to figure out what's the difference between this and like Stream Analytics, because it seems like they're doing something similar. Right. But I mean, my realization after using them is like Stream Analytics is really good for things where you might want to actually kind of massage the data a little bit. Like you want to enhance the data as it's coming through with other things and then maybe plant it somewhere else, as opposed to the time series, which is really about like, I got these multiple massive hubs feeding data in here, and I actually want to correlate data between them in real time and then view that,
Right. Almost seems like Stream Analytics is point in time, whereas this is across a small window, right?
Well, I think they both work on real-time data, right? They're both coming in. But right. One of them, I feel like the Stream Analytics is more targeted at, like, I want to manipulate this and then, like, maybe transpose it and put it in another data source, as opposed to Time Series Insights being, like, a purely visual analytics solution that's on top of it. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it also seems like this brings, and I think your statement about being a PaaS service, right, is it brings the UI and kind of the... Yep. Some of the layering on top of it that a lot of people are going to go develop on their own, probably right. Using Stream Analytics under the covers, right? But it's a more PaaS-like solution. Versus Stream Analytics is, I don't want to say it's bare metal because it's there's still way tons of complexity underneath it, but you're still kind of writing raw queries and you're figuring out where I want data to come in and how I want it to be massaged and where I want it exported to, right? So you're closer to the underlying infrastructure of Stream Analytics. This feels like you're a couple steps up, right? That that value stack.
Right. Okay, good. You know, speaking of build, I was reminded about the Azure boot camps that we normally do. I know, Evan, you used to be part of them, right?
Yeah, and we just had it two weekends ago. I actually spoke at the one here in Charlotte.
Oh, yeah. I know you always do that. How did that go?
Great. We had almost 100 people showed up on a Saturday, a bright, beautiful, sunny, blue sky Saturday in the Carolinas. And so clearly they were excited about the technology to show up on that kind of a day. But we had a good time.
That's great. Okay. I think that's a good wrap-up of the news for this week. It's a light week. Let's now turn over to our special guest, Megan. Megan, you know, I was looking at the – is HashiCorp, right? Is that the company that you're with? So – you know, we like to bring in like partners into the show from time to time, and this was a good example of you know, where we could get somebody in to talk about what they do and how they add value to the Azure space. So I got to be honest, I had not heard about HashiCorp until Kale mentioned it to us, and I had to look it up. And you guys have been around for quite a while. Give us a feel for what you guys have been doing, and you know, how you got to where you are now.
Sure. So I'm Megan Lisa. I work at HashiCorp in the marketing side. And HashiCorp started about 2012. So yeah, a number of years ago, but HashiCorp has been on kind of a journey since that point. And what I mean by that is it has 7 open source projects. And back when it started, it kicked off the first 1 and 2 projects, which was Vagrant and Packer. And a lot of people listening may actually know those. Those are really prevalently used by like millions of people.
Right. I've heard of Vagrant for sure. Yeah.
That's actually one of the things is like people hear HashiCorp and they're like, yeah, I'm not really sure about HashiCorp. And then you start listing the products, our open source projects, and then possibly any of the enterprise products. And people are like, yeah, I use that, you know, and they use 1 or 2 of them. And so that was kind of why I wanted to join today is like, yeah, to talk about all the products and then how they really fit together to work with Microsoft and the Azure business to drive the use of those services and help organizations move their applications to the cloud. So they started, 2012, and that was when they kicked off Vagrant and Packer, and then they moved into launching Terraform, Vault, Nomad, and Consul. And so those are the open source projects that they have going, and then the ones that then HashiCorp, the actual company, was founded on top of. Yeah, the two founders are Mitchell Hashimoto and Armon Duggar. And so Hashimoto is really where the company name comes from. So HashiCorp, but Hashi means bridge. And so it's bridging kind of the operation security and application deployment process across cloud and private data.
So it seems like you guys are, I mean, because if you look at across the different products that you're talking about, they're all about, you know, taking some of the complexity out of managing your deployments, you know, be it IaaS, PaaS, or whatever, even just VMs, right, or machines. Is that the right way to kind of look at the suite as a whole, or?
Yeah, well, if you really take a step back and kind of look at the suite, they're really focused on automating infrastructure, and it's really any infrastructure. So the mission is to be able to provision, secure, and run any infrastructure, which is kind of, you know, why the engagement with Microsoft and the Azure team makes so much sense, is you provision your core infrastructure, and then you need to make sure it's secure, and then you would then deploy, you know, have an application platform that your developers engage with to then run your applications. So if you think about the services that Azure makes available, it's like, how does an operator go and provision that? And then how do they make that available up to their development team to spin up infrastructure as they need to run any application? So,
okay.
Yeah. So does that kind of...
It does. I mean, it's about making it easier to manage these resources ultimately.
Right. And we can, the focus of the company is really not necessarily on the technology, but it's like the workflow. And so if you take Terraform, for example, which is the product to provision infrastructure, it allows an operator to create a Terraform configuration file. And what they do, it has a common configuration language. And so it can codify any piece of infrastructure. So it calls the API And so this could be any service spinning up some type of VM in Azure or, you know, SQL databases or whatever. It can spin up that, it can call that infrastructure, the APIs. It's codified in a common language. They run that configuration file, and then it will go out and provision that infrastructure in Azure. And then that kind of is the process as you manage it. Since it's in a codified file, this is then available to do version control. You can share it amongst like an operations team. It can be iterative. And you're really like then able to build infrastructure safely over time and also have a single view of what that infrastructure is.
So Megan, you know, when you were saying that, I was thinking of like an ARM template, right? Like what we have in Azure today. So can you compare that a little bit for me with, you know, how does an ARM template compare to that codified language that you just talked about?
Yeah, so Terraform, I would say the biggest difference with Terraform is, like, our mission as a company is to be technology agnostic. And so the configuration language that Terraform uses can actually call any type of any infrastructure provider. So it works great with it also works for AWS, it can work for GCP. It can also work for any type of other external service that has an exposed API. And so it has two kind of parts, like Terraform has two parts where it's the core that actually is the workflow of codifying and then doing a plan and apply it and to actually provision the infrastructure. But the second part is there's an extensible component where providers are written. And this could be, so there's an Azure provider and all of the Azure resources are then included in there. So then you can just go look it up and see what you need to call using that kind of common Terraform configuration language. And then the second part is then there's other, you know, other providers. So it could be for DNS services or it can be for other clouds. And that's really the benefit of it. So it's a common way that any operators can then kind of spin up any infrastructure.
And so, Megan, you had mentioned earlier on about there's a lot of open source products that you guys work with. And I don't know for sure if like Terraform's one of them, but basically if a new cloud or a new type of hypervisor or something comes along or even new services, is this something that the open source community is helping kind of build, like those providers and whatnot? Or how's that work? Is that part open source so it's extensible that lets people write whatever they want out there?
Yeah. So the definitely we work with organizations. So the Microsoft team does help contribute to the community to make sure that all of the Azure resources are updated and current, and to actually continue to build out all of the resources that support the services available in Azure. And then community contributors from other companies, providers, whatever, they also contribute to build out that provider list. We have a large ecosystem of partners because our goal is really to make sure that operators can spin up whatever those endpoints are that they need for their infrastructure.
So functionally, I mean, what someone's going to walk away with, this is a tool for a DevOps type world where, you know, I'm going to declaratively define my resources. And as the, you know, developer or infrastructure person, I may not really know ultimately where this is going to land, be it, you know, AWS, which we'll admit does exist, and, you know, or Azure or whatever else. I'm just defining what I need, and then my, you know, whoever is managing, you know, kind of the actual deployments for me is picking where this stuff goes. But it's transparent to me because I'm defining the same stuff no matter what.
That's exactly right. That's the workflows that we create are to create, kind of decouple the actions or the concerns of like an operator that needs to spin up the infrastructure versus a developer that just needs to deploy their application.
But how does that work? So if a developer has to say, I need I don't know, a mobile service, okay. You're assuming that mobile service, whatever thing exists on any of the cloud platforms, right? Because you want to be agnostic. How do you create like a language or something or define something? Do you take like the least common denominator of all clouds? Is that what's considered as part of the workflow?
So there's actually another tool that's targeted to the developer workflow, which is called Nomad, and this is an application, a cluster manager and scheduler. So Nomad then is aware of what the underlying infrastructure is that has been provisioned, but then when a developer then deploys a job, the developer basically declares what the application requirements are, and then pushes that job out, and Nomad intelligently figures out where those right resources are.
I see. So it does the mapping between what the developer wants, which is to what services are available in that particular cloud.
So that's where it's decoupled. So Nomad handles the engagement of the developer with like an the application layer, and then the infrastructure operator actually provisions the underlying infrastructure that creates that data center. And that data center, like you know, kind of becomes more of a, like a virtualized thing that may span Azure, other clouds, also maybe a private cloud data center.
Oh, so you can actually span stuff at that point. So you kind of can pick and choose whatever works best for your, you know, for your application, your scenario. You're not limited to, hey, I've picked Azure for, you know, these three things that Azure has that I absolutely need or love, but, you know, I need this other thing that's sitting over here in this other cloud provider.
Yeah. Being able to combine infrastructure is one of the key things, yeah, that Terraform would provide, because it's technology agnostic. The workflow is the same. No matter what, you're just calling the API.
So what's the sweet spot for somebody for your customers, basically? Because, you know, obviously, if you're just using, say, AWS, right, would you still use Terraform? Does it make sense if you have AWS plus something else?
Yeah, so we kind of find two entry points for customers, like, tend to use us. So the first one is, like, DevOps. Like, we're moving to a DevOps model. And so we want to be able to do infrastructure as code. And like you said, if you're all kind of like in AWS, you know, they may choose that kind of like home unique tool. But the idea is that probably most people will want to spin up applications over the long run across multiple clouds. So you're kind of not locked in. So that would be the reason for Terraform. We also have another tool called Vault though. And that's really focused on security. And so what it does is three things. Is it helps organizations who were kind of really focused on a network, like a perimeter-based security where they just kind of like push security to the network, right? And now they're like extending into the cloud, and they're just really not sure how to control like secrets that are embedded in applications. And they're really not just quite sure how to make sure their data is encrypted regardless of where it's stored. So it might be stored in the cloud, it might be stored in their home system, but make sure that all of their data is protected. And then kind of the third point is how do they manage access of humans to machines, and then what machines can access machines, because they're really going after like this microservices architecture where resources are coming and going quickly. And so security ends up being a very big pain point. So a lot of customers that may be in one cloud, they do use the kind of like the more cloud native like configuration tools, but then they enter and use Vault as their secrets management and just like cloud security overall, because it kind of just addresses the challenges of distributed, hybrid, and very dynamic cloud environments. And then a lot of times as they start shifting away from just a single cloud model, maybe they acquire a company or they need DR or something like that, is when they start realizing that Terraform is probably the right approach, because they need that a multi-cloud strategy. So that's a lot of times where people kind of end up.
In that Vault, just a click down on that, Megan, is that like an HSM type device? Like, how are you ensuring that's encrypted, or how does that thing kind of work?
Actually, it's not an HSM device, but we do integrate with the HSM. It's like a Vault node or server that is spun up, runs on like an instance in, you know, whatever your infrastructure is. It could be Azure or Amazon or wherever, and it creates an interface for a security operator to, so it's similar to Terraform in the sense that there's like Vault Core, and then you have like some like, not providers, but what we call authentication backends, and these could be to authenticate for access. So like if you have a lot of developers using GitHub, and you can use that as like your access, your authentication backend, or something like that. So that's how you kind of control access policies. But then it just has an interface where you can create policies that say, you know, this person can access these machines. And so it's like a server that runs on an instance. And then you can actually backend it with an HSM if you require the kind of certifications around that.
You mentioned some of the servers. So it sounds like, so the deployment model is you deploy, I guess, the... the servers and various components to run Terraform on your being the customer's infrastructure, right? Everybody has their own deployment of Terraform, or is it a central service that you guys provide as well, where I'm basically submitting, you know, my declarative templates to the central service and then it provisions stuff out for me?
Yeah, so it can be, we offer both. We have it as a SaaS offering. So as a managed service where we have it and you have your own like account, and then the UI is run through the SaaS. And then you can also have it as a private install where it's completely separate.
Okay. Yeah. So you do provide the fully managed approach. If somebody likes the functionality but doesn't want to, you know, again, to the whole point of the, you know, a lot of the conversation, they don't want to deal with the complexities underneath. They just want the capabilities.
They just want to be able to log in and create their config files. And yep. And it fully integrates with GitHub and Bitbucket and GitLab. So all of the version control systems. So once you create those Terraform configuration files, they could be checked into version control and collaborated on. And that is all integrated through the SaaS offering.
Nice.
Yeah. And then there's actually one more. So we kind of talked about Terraform for infrastructure provisioning. Vault was for security. Nomad is what the developers engage with. And then the final, the last product is Consul, which is like for service discovery and your runtime configuration, which is super neat. And a lot of organizations use this to do connect their application platform so that any upstream like services know about each other. And then as you deploy applications, you know what your healthy services are, what services are active versus which ones are not active anymore. And then there's a number of other things that organizations use that. But that's really been key for the companies that are kind of moving to a microservices architecture. And then kind of down the DevOps line for them to be able to keep track of everything that's going on in their more complex network topologies.
So Megan, I have a question too, then back to the open source stuff again. So you mentioned a lot of different products here that kind of work to fulfill this portfolio of tools that people would use to kind of use these products and whatnot. But the question I have is, does Terraform offer like support for that, or is that something that's offered as like, okay, these are kind of blessed by HashiCorp in general, and we kind of support these, and then the open source stuff just kind of sprawls off of that, and the support is a different model for that, or how does that work?
Yeah, so it'd probably be good for me to just like step back and talk. So there's the open source projects; those are freely downloadable from the individual product websites. So you have Terraform.io, VaultProject.io. And so on and so forth for each of the products. Now, we also have a tier of like what we call Pro and Premium that come with support levels, and then also they come with additional features that really enable like collaboration and the governance as larger organizations start to use them. So open source. They can contact us to get support, but in general, like kind of if you're using open source, it's more for like getting used to the tools, maybe single users, not like larger teams and organizations maybe aren't kind of as deeply into it. And so we don't get as much support needs there. As soon as organizations kind of graduate to be like, okay, now I have a team of like 2 to 10 people using Terraform now. Maybe it's 2 to 10 operators are using Terraform. They're like, okay, I kind of need to elevate this to be able to have support and a number of features that kind of help my teams collaborate and use things. So a lot of the features are tiered based. And so open source is available to everyone, and then Pro and Premium are on a paid basis. And you can contact us at HashiCorp.com to get started on those.
And I noticed that you have a lot of providers. I mean, you mentioned some of the top ones, but your full list is pretty big. Maybe you mentioned this earlier. Who actually builds out all those providers? Do you guys build all of them, or is that all community provided, or the vendors themselves provide that?
A lot of what you just said. So
all the
everything,
above.
Everything.
Yeah, so we have we have a number of things that we do, and then we have a number of partnerships, and one of them is with Microsoft, where we are kind of like dedicated to building out those resources. We have a number number of like newer services that come online that they kind of will go and create it. We've had partners that go and create services for customers, or I'm sorry, create providers for customers that they're engaging with. So it's kind of all over. And there's some really funny statistic with that cloud we won't mention. But we've actually been able to build a resource as a provider for, you know, them almost as quick as they release the service itself. So the community engagement is huge, and then of course our engineering team is just really on it as well.
This is totally random to the, you know, technical aspect, but I was just looking through the providers, and I'd like to point out that we are the only one that has two, because ASM is so different than ARM that apparently there was no getting from A to B. Yeah.
Glad you guys are off looking at them. Yep.
It is a long list. I've been in this space for a long time, and some of these I don't even know. So, you know, it's an impressive list.
But I'm curious to, like, what's the, let's just talk about some of the, I mean, it all sounds good, right? But let's talk of some of the downsides to having this yet another layer in between the developer and the actual end cloud or end infrastructure. What are the overhead that it entails? Like, how many, does it take longer to do stuff? Does it scale as well? Things like that. You know, what can you say about that?
It doesn't take longer, actually. I mean, what we found is being able to codify, like, infrastructure, codify your declarative files for running applications, it just creates reusability and automation for those parts of the organization that are concerned with those activities. So it really can increase productivity for a lot of those teams. It also allows them to work in parallel, which is really the DevOps. The drive for like DevOps and the concern with why organizations are moving to DevOps. And in fact, that was really kind of the initial market that HashiCorp was positioned to go after, was to enable application delivery faster. And the tools just naturally kind of do that. And it was workflow based rather than technology based. So you don't necessarily have to think about it as another layer between applications and the cloud. It's really just like, it's just the tools, and we call them that. These are the tools that enable the codification and automation of what these teams are trying to do.
Yeah, it looks, you know, as I kind of look through it and browse around, I mean, it feels a lot like, you know, a lot of the other higher order languages that we all tend to work with these days, where, I mean, there's layers and layers and layers of abstraction and complexity that sit underneath. But my life is made easier because I'm developing in a higher order language, be it declarative or programmatic. Right. But either way, I'm just doing whatever I'm doing in that language. Everything else underneath just works for me.
Right. Right?
And that's what this kind of feels like as I look around. Is that a reasonable way to look at this, Megan?
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing was, like, there was a reason that different products were created, is that it kind of took a Unix approach. Like, let's go after one objective and do that really well. And then align that with one key kind of part of the organization. So it was like, you know, Terraform is going to be concerned with just managing provisioning, right? And then, like, the infrastructure can exist. It can be new infrastructure can come, infrastructure can change, but the workflow will not change. And all we need to do then is just have a new provider, right?
So
that was for Terraform. It's like, let's make the job for the operator a lot easier and enable them to just choose whatever infrastructure they want and not change the workflow, not change what they do on a daily basis. Then it was like, okay, well, let's fix the job of the security engineer. What are they concerned about? And let's do that really well. Create one workflow that then addresses their concerns and works across any infrastructure and application. Then the third part is like your developer audience. It's like, okay, what does a developer care about? Well, they really care about, they have a lot of different like developer services concerned about, different types of applications that they're running. It's like, we just want to create that one workflow that then allows them to deploy any type of application, big data, Elastic, any type of long running service. And then deploy that to any infrastructure. It needs to be the infrastructure best suited for their application. And so that was the idea, is that we're just going to address the needs, the concerns for the individual teams, and just do that really well, and not be focused on the technology, but really what is the workflow.
No, it makes sense. I mean, it allows them to focus on just the things that really they're the domain experts on, and they tend to, a security person knows their security backwards and forwards, but doesn't know anything about infrastructure, right?
That's good. Yeah, that's. I mean, it does require a slight leap of faith, though, right? That okay, that Terraform is going to take care of all that correctly. Right, because normally, you know, if you're kind of paranoid about security and things like that, you want to make sure that okay, my cloud is secure. Right now, you guys are kind of front ending that a little bit by you submit your configuration to Terraform then submits the configuration over to the actual cloud or whatever infrastructure you may have. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's calling the APIs. Terraform does a couple of things that are unique and. I mean, we didn't get into it earlier, but Terraform separates basically the planning stage, where it creates a graph of everything that's going to basically happen to your infrastructure before it actually does the apply. And so you have the opportunity to view that plan of what's going to happen to your infrastructure and then make sure that everything's okay. Any conflicts or resolutions that would need to be required or dependencies would be flagged during that stage. And then once everything's clear, then you would push it. You would do the apply where it pushes it out into production. So there are ways that things that we've built in to account for that, to make sure that like you are iterating your infrastructure safely, that when you do make a change, it's not going to mess up everything else that you have in place.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, but ultimately all these resources, They're on these platforms natively, so I can go see my virtual machines or my SQL databases or my whatever and see them directly if I want to. I'm not restricted to just going through the HashiCorp layers to see these resources.
Yeah, I mean, they are provisioned in Azure, you know.
Right.
You can see them there. I mean, if they're spun up, they're spun up.
Yeah, the one question I had, that sounds really interesting. Like that, it's almost like a what-if type thing of like yeah. – Here's what I'm going to do. What if I do this? What's it going to look like? Then, Megan, does that work almost like a database then, like to say, okay, yeah, I'll go ahead and accept that. It's almost like committing a transaction. And then if I say, what about the rollback? Is that something that's encompassed there too? I'm interested in that as well.
There's the ability to do a rollback. And a number of the stuff that we're getting into is not part of the open source project. These are things that are part of the like pro and premium packages. But there is a rollback workflow in the SaaS offering and even the private one through the UI. But yeah, it allows if something does, you know, go wrong or you realize that like the operator didn't do something, you know, they intended to, you have the ability to roll back if needed. There's a great talk. If anyone wants to go watch it, it's on YouTube. HashiConf last year, it was called Applying Graph Theory to your infrastructure. And that's really the basis of how Terraform builds out the dependencies between all of the infrastructure and figures out where conflicts may be before you actually roll it into production.
Awesome.
That's cool. That's great.
Yeah. All right. This has been a great introduction to what you guys do at HashiCorp. Megan, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. Any more questions before we wrap up the show, guys?
No, this was great. It's always nice to hear about another, you know, tool out there that helps developers, create this infrastructure, right? Because it's tough for them at times. Don't make it too easy, though, Megan, because if you make it too easy, I don't have a job. I'm in support, so you got to make sure you break some things once in a while for me.
Sure. You know, our goal is really, and we're kind of like working on the organizations to move their applications to the cloud. So if we can do that, then, you know, Azure is going to be very busy.
Okay, that works. That's fair.
That's fair. All right, Megan.
I guess the other thing is, could we get some links maybe we could put in the show notes for our listeners about where to go get some information about some of these products and whatnot?
And including that YouTube video you were talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'll send that stuff over. I mean, the high level one is HashiCorp.com. That'll kind of get you started on wherever you need to go. But I'll send over all the links so you have those as well.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Megan.
Yeah, thanks, Megan.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.